Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah.
Wake up, Hollywood.
Dude, so you got to tell us.
What? What'd I have to tell you?
How'd it go?
It was awesome.
So Eddie just won. We were plugging.
Yeah, we plugged it. Desperately.
And you were very like, if you want to vote for me, go ahead.
So if anybody out there did vote for me for the Kevin and Bean April Foolishness
which
opening act
did,
contest, I really appreciate it.
So Eddie Pence won, and he got to perform... What was it, Saturday night?
Saturday night at the Shrine Auditorium.
Shrine Auditorium, which is like one of the most coveted theaters in the world, really. The Oscars have been there.
Yeah.
The Grammys have been there. They've had MTV Movie and Music Awards there. All kinds of award shows.
It's enormous.
It's huge. You performed in front of 6,000 people.
Yeah.
Screaming fans
Crazy.
That were all sauced up.
Crazy.
Because they were in there drinking for 2 hours.
Well, they do a smart thing by opening the door at 6 and then opening the bar up so people get like nice and... Toasty before the show starts.
So, and I saw your picture, and I was just so, I was like so happy for you.
It was cool.
Because I know that, you know, A, you deserve it.
Thanks.
You know, it's long overdue. And B, it is just badass that you won a contest like
that. I know.
Who wins contests like
that? I don't know.
Dude.
I think they had like over 100 submissions or something like that.
So. That's amazing. So, out of 100 comics, you got down to the top 10.
Top 10.
Then you got down to the top 3. So, tell us... How they let you know about...
Well, Thursday night, I get a call from the station, one of the guys at the station saying, hey, you're in the top 3. We can't tell you if you won or not because we're going to do it live on the air tomorrow morning. So just be awake at 7:30
and you by must your have, phone. You must have loved like, oh, 7:30? Okay.
I was like, sure, yeah. I'm always up that early for no reason. So I woke up at like 7:15 so I can get rid of the morning voice. And 7:30 came around and they didn't call.
And you're just like, damn it.
I'm like,
you sons of bitches.
I'm going to. I swear I'm going to come down.
Not cool. Not funny either.
What?
Just kidding.
And then they call. It's like 7:40, like 10 minutes in. And I'm like, ah. It was
like,
awesome.
Like they should have told you, hey, we may be late. Like,
nah.
You know, because you must have been really pissed. I would have been pissed.
I was, and I tuned into the radio station to listen to see if they had talked about, we had just talked to so-and-so and they won, but they hadn't mentioned it. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe they're.
Oh, man, your heart must have been pumping, man. Seriously.
It wasn't pumping. It was more of like I wasn't nervous. Like, I hadn't...
You're excited.
I was just like, I don't want to be up this early for no reason. Like, because I won't be able to go back to sleep.
No.
Either way, I'm not going to be able to go back to sleep. Maybe they're going to be like happy that I won that bill of sleep, or I'm going to be pissed that I got up this early and no one called
Dude,
me.
Dude, you deserve it. You deserve it so much. And you know what? I was so stoked because you didn't announce it till... I think like the night before, maybe the day of. When did you... I don't think you announced it on Thursday.
Announced what?
That you won.
Well, I wasn't allowed to say anything until Friday.
Ah. Because I saw it on Friday and I was like, how is he just telling us?
They told me not to mention until Friday. I couldn't say anything until the winner had been announced on Friday morning.
Dude. And you know what? When I saw the... First I saw the news and then I saw the picture of how many people you performed in front of. And I was like,
this is
awesome. So Eddie... You, my friend, are going to have to take a little bow. Take a little curtsy. It's not 6,000 people in our studio audience, but
no,
hey.
Not even close.
It's You're like, that sounds like nothing compared to what I went through. So you weren't nervous at all?
No.
You just went in there? You're like, I'm just going to
It's exciting. It's not nervous. Like, I love doing this, so it's not nervous. I don't get nervous. It's like exciting.
Well, I always think like comics, like if you, because you had a time limit, you were saying.
Yeah, like five, a little over, like around 5 minutes.
Okay, so were you like shuffling jokes in your head? Were you like, don't do that one? No, do that
one.
I
was on
this one.
I was on stage and like, I'd planned out like 3 bits, each up about 5 minutes. And for some reason that it timed out a little long because with such a big crowd, you have to kind of wait for laughs.
Right.
So.
Right.
It's almost like a wave, like like the laugh goes all the way back there and comes back. Like you have to wait, and so the bits are actually.
Did you just burp
I did.
The
burp.
Air?
I had.
Was it like that?
It was like that.
That's 6,000 people.
Yeah.
Maybe like
then I had to wait
500.
And I had to wait. How long is this? So long.
Well, I bet it was longer in person and, at the shrine.
So I ended up, at in the middle of the set, I ended up throwing in an extra joke I wasn't planning on doing.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Very, very, very professional.
So did you know, when you're in that moment, sometimes I call audibles. Did you see anything that triggered you calling an audible in that moment? Like, okay, I know what I'm going to do. These are the hits. Let me do all the hits. And then you're just like, oh, I didn't think I was going to do that one, but I just did it.
No, I thought in my head, because like when you're doing stand-up, I mean, I'm probably same with singing, you're delivering jokes, but I also have an inner monologue going on in my head,
yeah,
too.
Like, yeah, I'm completely planning the next step.
You're completely detached. You have two minds.
Yes.
You're completely detached.
Isn't that weird?
It's very strange you can do that. And so I'm just like going, okay, I could do this joke. And then I was like, well, maybe I should do this. Like, I'm doing the jokes, but at the same time, I'm thinking in my head, well, maybe I could throw this joke in right now. What about this joke? Like, I'm trying to, because I knew I had time to add an extra joke. So I was like shuffling through my head. Like,
did you do the joke that you had the YouTube clip on that people?
No, I didn't repeat anything.
Oh, that's cool.
It was only 2 minutes on the YouTube thing. So I didn't want to repeat any of that. Yeah. So.
No, especially because so many people voted for you and saw that.
Yeah, and I have enough material.
But there's probably some people that wanted to hear that.
Yeah.
But you're like, I'll keep them waiting.
But it was cool because I showed up and I was at the, you know, I was hanging out in the, they had like a pre-party room where it's like, you know, VIPs and people who paid like extra money to be on the party bus or whatever it's called, went in and drank before the show and had hors d'oeuvres. And like people were coming up to me like, oh, are you Eddie? I voted for you. Like it was like a lot
that's
of people coming
awesome.
Up.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's pretty
so
cool.
So people actually went in and invested time.
Yeah, watched. People recognize, well, because like, especially K-Rock, there's... They have a very loyal fan base.
Especially Kevin and Bean.
Kevin and Bean have
not
a very
so much K-Rock as much as Kevin
crazy
Bean.
Loyal fan base.
Yeah.
And like they are heavily invested in everything those guys do. And they were invested in this contest. Like people came to me like, yeah, I watched all the videos. You were the funniest one. I voted for you. Like I'm like, that's wow, you awesome. Watched all 10 videos?
And they all had to be what, 2 minutes long? Yeah. Something like that? Dude, that's
crazy.
Amazing.
It was
that's
crazy.
Awesome. It was a magical experience.
It was cool.
We're very happy for you.
It's definitely the highlight of 2015 so far.
Well, dude, it's not even over. And you've already
it's not even half
like,
over.
And this was the biggest crowd. You said before this you'd perform in front of
I've performed like 1,000, maybe 1,500.
But that's a big difference. That's a big difference.
Yes.
Because I've done, you know, thousands. Like I see a difference between 400 and 1,000. I see a difference between 1,000 and 5,000 and even 5,000 and 10,000. It's just I think any more than 200, it's kind of about the same, but anything more than 200 people. And
well, I think more than 200 is no longer personal.
Well,
especially
yeah.
with stand-up comedy. I don't know with music, but with stand-up comedy, it ceases to be an intimate experience once it's more than 200 people.
Well, you're like performing for the first four rows
and
then everybody else.
It's basically like when there's that many people, it's basically like you're performing on television.
Right.
You're
right.
just doing your jokes and the audience is responding appropriately because they know – it's weird that the audience will respond where they're supposed to respond.
And did you hear like a wave of laughter? Like, oh.
Yeah.
That's
it
awesome.
Carries and like you'll say a joke and like, well, maybe that didn't hit as hard, but then the laughter will come like a beat later.
That's awesome.
It's strange, but it's just
you But know, you were just like hitting it out of the park. Did you get any video pictures, et cetera, et cetera?
My wife, Tracy, she videotaped it from the audience.
She's like, oh my God, I can't enjoy this. Yeah. I'm gonna
miss the whole moment and just videotape it.
But you know what? You need that footage, and that's awesome footage. And
so, it was cool.
We're stoked, and we wish you the best to do more things like
Thanks.
That. So, right on, Eddie.
What'd you do?
Nothing. No, I'm just kidding. I actually did
take pictures of Otis.
I did a lot of pictures of Otis. Did you see the picture of him in the bow tie? Man,
no,
that
I
guy.
Didn't.
He's
I
a
didn't.
Little rascal. That boy. Mm. You know what's funny? I was thinking about this today. I have bought this dog every kind of chew toy imaginable. And he still goes after the slippers. He still goes after shoelaces on any tennis
That's
shoe.
Why you don't buy dogs, especially puppies. You don't buy them. You buy them. You take an old sock and tighten a knot.
That's it? Does that
like,
work?
Until they lose their puppy teeth.
Yeah, but we've done that with socks, and he's over that. He likes ropes. He likes sticks. He loves sticks.
Well, they want stuff they can sink their teeth, because he's still got puppy teeth, right?
Yep.
He's trying to get rid of those puppy teeth.
Yeah.
So he's trying to sink his – he wants something he can sink his teeth into. Not like a rubber thing, but something that actually his teeth can go into.
Right.
Because it helps his gums feel better.
But he always goes after, like, slippers.
Yeah,
because like
he can get his teeth into them,
but
into the leather.
He doesn't go for the – he goes for the rubber part.
Really?
So he can just and he loves shoelaces.
Shoelaces, yeah, because they can get their teeth into the shoelaces.
But that's got to be easy.
It's gotta, it rubs on their gums.
Weird. Anyways, I spent a lot of time with Otis.
Yeah.
Took him to the fam's house for Easter brunch.
Nice.
I actually played a bunch of gigs, some fashion mall gigs over the weekend. So I played most of the weekend. Yesterday was actually my first day off over the weekend that I could enjoy. But, dude, I was so happy for your show, man. I was pumped. And I read the reviews. There was a review. Who wrote that?
I think somebody from like, you know, CBS is a, or K-Rock's a CBS affiliate, so I think someone from there wrote one, and then some like Orange County.
And you were so blogger. Mr. Social Network, which was awesome. Like, you were like, you were doing all the tags. And,
you gotta
dude, that's smart, man. That's smart. I don't do that shit.
You gotta do it.
I get lazy. It's a pain. I'm like, I'll put it on Facebook, and that's about it, dude. Yes. I'll tag my band members, maybe, and that's about it.
You gotta do it.
But, no, it was awesome, man. I'm stoked for you, man. We can't wait till you hit the Shrine and many other stadiums around the globe. But, oh, I think our special guest has arrived.
Hello.
Recording engineer Ethan Carlson, say hello one more time.
Hey, how are you?
Eddie forgot to push.
Well, it's you know.
I know those consoles can be confusing.
It's crazy. It's crazy confusing.
It's really confusing for comedians. He's also basking in the light, the glow of Saturday nights. Real quick, before we start with you're performing tonight, Eddie, right?
Oh yeah, at some bar.
Dude, that sucks for that bar. They're like, dude, he just came from the Shrine. They're so stoked. Nah. What bar are you performing at?
It's tonight? Called The Den. I think it's on Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, dude, Mr. Vig, you're so Hollywood.
Oh, yeah,
dude.
It's so huge. It's so huge.
If there's not 6,000 people, it's just not important anymore. Dude.
There's not going to be 0.1% of it.
So, Ethan.
Yo.
You originally are from?
Seattle, Washington.
Seattle, Washington. That's right. Grunge City. Ethan and I actually met maybe 3 years ago. Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah, was that
remember? 3 years ago, I was doing vocals for my record, Music of the New Day, and we had some like weird glitch on the tape. So we found another studio to do the vocals in that had the mic that I wanted, and Ethan was the engineer. And Ethan, how old are you, real quick?
31.
He's 31, and let me tell you, I did that whole record on analog tape. I don't know many 31-year-old engineers that know how to do digital and analog. And Ethan rocked my vocal sessions for that whole record. And, man, you are an amazing engineer. And I've been wanting to get you on the show for a long time. You've worked with a lot of great cats. So tell us what got you into music. Tell us what got you into the groove.
I mean, I started playing trumpet in fourth grade and enjoyed it in school. When I got to high school, I was going to give it up. But my mom was like, no, you got to... stick it out a little bit more.
You're like, but Mom, did you play this girls, song? I can't keep playing the trumpet.
Mom. Yeah,
was that lesson one?
I was a band geek. But luckily, I had a really good high school music teacher, and it was really fun. And we did a couple projects where we would go into recording studios and do a jazz band recording or something. And
that's amazing. In high school?
In high school.
That's insane.
So that's kind of what got me excited about recording studios, these giant rooms and big consoles and fancy microphones that don't touch them.
And you started recording marching bands?
Well, no. I mean, I was playing. Jazz bands? I was playing in the band, and we would just go in there to record.
Oh, just to lay. So you were in the musical band? Okay,
right.
Okay, I see.
And so I got interested in it, and we had a couple high school projects where you had to research possible careers or what you want to study in college, and found out that there's a few different schools that offer recording programs and ended up going to University of Miami.
Oh, that's a good school. That's a great music school, actually.
Very good jazz program there. I kind of just skated by with my trumpet playing.
You're like, okay.
I was in the classical department. I almost got kicked out because of my trumpet playing. Yeah, I was.
Why?
I was on probation when I got accepted there.
You were on probation? What?
I was on probation for the first semester, and then you have to do a jury at the end of the first semester and play for all the faculty.
Yeah.
They put me on final probation.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were just not practicing, or what? No, you were partying too much?
No, I was playing. I was practicing, but it was not my passion. The trumpet playing. But the music program was great, learning more about music theory and doing ear training, piano. And then
did you like all those classes?
Yeah, it was great.
I hated theory. I hated theory.
No, I loved it because I hadn't taken any theory before college.
Well, did you have jazz theory or classical theory?
It was more classical.
Yeah, that's what I had. I hated it. I was in the groove with classical music, and I hated it. But ear training, I loved. That was my favorite class. I was like, oh my God, I could do this forever.
Well, it was nice that music made a lot more sense all of a sudden. I mean, you've been playing all these scales, and you're just, I mean, as a trumpet player, you're just part of a section. You don't get the whole scope. You're not like a guitar player or piano player where you're
playing
with
chords.
Big chords. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was the first time where things kind of came into focus. I'm like, it all kind of makes sense.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when did you get into recording? You got into recording at Miami, I take it.
Yeah. I mean, I had been doing home recording.
After they were like, let's put you on probation twice.
Right. So I made it past the probation period. Did a good enough job to stay in school.
Stay in school, kids. That's the message here. Right, Eddie?
But it was a great program because you take all the music classes. You take recording classes. You take computer science classes and electrical engineering classes. So it's very broad. I thought going in there that everybody wanted to work in a recording studio.
Right.
But I'm the only one from my class that is now working in studios doing
music.
That's
amazing. Really? Yeah.
Other people went to work for Microsoft writing code for programs. Right. Some people are doing post-production for TV and film. Some people...
Isn't it crazy to see that? For me, that was crazy. It's like a lot of people went to school to study that, and then they went... Some people went really far off the map. You know, I had friends that went to physics afterwards. It was like, dude, how did you go from that to that, you know? But it's interesting. Mm-hmm. So you're the only one that is still working in music, that is doing recording.
Yeah, and in school, I mean, I was the one that was staying late nights in the studio on campus and doing projects in my own time. And so it was pretty clear from the beginning that, like, I was kind of the one in my class that wanted to do it.
Right.
But it was still great collaborating with the other friends. And really, you learn the most from doing projects with your other friends.
That's true. That's true. You must have been the guy that everybody was like, hey, Ethan, can you record my band?
I did a lot of college bands.
Yes.
Again, they had a great jazz program there, so there were a lot of really good jazz people would come into the studio, and then singer-songwriters. And
what was your favorite thing to record in school?
In school?
I don't think I've ever asked an engineer that question.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the jazz stuff more than the singer-songwriter stuff. I'm trying to remember if there's any projects that have really stuck with me. I mean, there's a few people that I started working with then that I still work with now.
Oh, what? They're in Los Angeles?
Yeah. A friend of mine, Julia Price, had worked with her back in college. And
She's listening. She's like, oh my God, he said my name on there.
She'll be a guest someday, I'm sure.
Yeah, she does a lot of YouTube content, so we do covers. And actually, I'm right now working on a project with Julia's friend, Taryn Southern, Taryn does a lot of YouTube content and TV hosting. And so we're doing a cover album of 80s covers.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been really fun. So we did a day recording at Stag Street Studio, which is where...
That's where I did all my... That's where I always do all my vocals now, Stag Street. Big shout out to Gary and Melody.
Why do you always do them there?
My favorite microphone's there. It's called a Telefunken 250.
No one else has
251,
actually. No one else has that microphone?
Some do, but some don't, and their rates are amazing. And
why do you like that? What's the difference in the microphone?
You know, I've done... The funny thing is, actually, Ethan was there for this mic test. So I did a mic test with another engineer about 10 years ago, okay? And we checked probably 30 microphones. And the one that always came out on top was this mic, the Telefunken 250 or 251 at Ocean Way Studios, different studio. So then I did a whole bunch of other records, and I would always talk about that microphone at Ocean Way. And Doug Messenger, who I actually will bring in too as a guest soon, but he was like, yeah, I don't have that microphone, but you know, there's a lot of studios I know that have them. And so he mentioned Stag Street. And then Ethan, not knowing that I wanted that microphone, or maybe you thought that I just wanted that microphone because...
I have no idea.
Ethan was like, let's do a mic test. And I brought, like, I have got some good microphones too, so I brought some microphones.
Do you have that microphone?
I do. That microphone is $15,000.
Fuck. There's no way. Why?
Because it's old.
What does it do?
It's old. It's very old, and you cannot get that kind of response from a lot of microphones. You can get close, but there's something about, and you know what? It's also the timbre of the voice. It, like, certain parts of a voice will match with a different microphone. Mm-hmm. Michael Jackson used a $300 microphone, you know, and he was amazing, which I've also used as well. And I love that microphone as well. It's a Shure SM7. But for some reason, the way I can mix the sound of a voice, my voice, with that microphone is like a magical thing. So, Ethan, we did another mic test 10 years later with, I think, 5 or 6 microphones, and I didn't know which microphone was the Telefunken because there was a different casing, I think.
It's like the Pepsi Challenge.
Yeah, it was like the Pepsi Challenge.
Microphone.
So we did 6 microphones and in a different studio 10 years later, and he didn't tell me which one was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And I didn't really know. I knew which one mine was, but the other 5 I just didn't know. And then I came inside, and he was like, I came inside of the control room, and he was like, which one did you like the best? And he played them all, and I said, 1. What is that? Whatever that is, we're doing it. And he was like, Telefunken 251, man. And I was like, dude, all right, I never need to do a mic test ever again. So I don't know if you remember that, but I remember
I remember doing the shootout. And I just want to say how difficult it was working with Nikki, not because he's a difficult guy, but because we were working...
Yeah!
We
how is it difficult to work with Nikhil? It's impossible.
Oh, man, I'm hardcore in the studio.
But we were using tape, which meant that any time we were doing a punch or overdubbing, we were erasing whatever was there previously. So if he messed up a single word in a phrase, but the phrase was just magical... We would have to go in, and I would just have to punch in to get in that word, and then write out.
And if you erased it, it was like, let's do it again. Let's do the whole thing again.
Yeah. So
it sounds awful. Sounds really terrible.
It was very tough.
But you know what? That's what I think. For me, I like to work like that, so that it's going to sound the way
I
want it to.
How much can you keep recording over tape before it loses?
You can do quite a bit. Yeah. Yeah, in the course of doing a record, you're not going to wear it out. But there are times where people will use a roll of tape for a long period of time because it's so expensive now, and it definitely degrades as you use it.
Let me see.
I can drive an engineer a little crazy with my vocal takes.
I can't even imagine.
And you know what? Most 9 times out of 10, like...
You should take your soundboard in there next time. Make them want to kill you.
So sometimes it's like... You know, an engineer will, like, I can do a vocal take and it'll be decent, you know? And they'll be like, that was great. And I'll be like, no, I can do better. And then it's like, dude, really? And I'm like, I'll just keep on hammering it until it's like what I want it to be. Well, sometimes.
And we had a couple of scenarios where Nikki would do a great take and I was like, dude, that was great. Don't touch it. He's like, no, I want to do it. And you realize we lose this great take
if you
do it again. Like,
because we weren't doing it to Pro Tools. You know, Pro Tools, you can save all those. And I was like, you know what? It's okay. It taught me a lot about just being able to do it in the flow, knowing when it's good enough, and also not beating a dead horse, but also it keeps your chops. Like, for me, it's like I should be able to do that 3-4 times and they all be usable. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it actually, for me, I was like, you know what? This made me better. And the nerve-wracking thing was I had been recording on tape at Doug's studio. And when I came to Stag, the first song we did it in one take. And I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be amazing. It's going to be so easy. And, you know, there were some humps. But usually we did about 2 songs a day. And it was definitely tedious sometimes. But Ethan, man, you are super patient, super diligent, and super detail-oriented.
That's why he goes home and stabs a pillow every night.
He's got a voodoo doll. Yeah, you've worked with some, now that you graduated college, and you've done a lot of work with a lot of great bands and artists. Just mention a few of the names that you've worked with, just so our listeners can be, you know, ooh and ah.
Sure. So right after college, I got hired to work with Barry Gibb from the Bee Gees.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was producing a record for Barbra Streisand at the time. And so worked with him for 4 years in Miami and got to work with... Yeah, Bee Gees have made a lot of money.
They did.
He had a nice house. We were first working out of a Bee Gees studio, and then they sold that, and then we were working out of his house. He has a very nice house, but got to know his whole family. They're all just awesome.
That's amazing. And he's a badass. Like, he's a badass songwriter, singer.
Oh, he's written for so many people and is so, I don't know, artistic but focused in the studio. It's great. Great to work with him. And got to do a project with Olivia Newton-John there. She was very nice.
She's very hot, too.
Yeah, she's still in great shape.
And he's like, let's not steer off the path. All right, Olivia Newton-John, Barry Gibb.
Right. So did that for 4 years, then came out to L.A. and started doing studio work at Stag and a couple other studios, and then started doing touring work as well, and worked with the band Carolina Liar. And did a tour with Tears for Fears.
Oh my God, I love that band.
Yeah, so I was doing
live broadcast
mixing for them. I did a tour with
Diva. How was that? That must have been awesome.
It was great, going through South America.
They still sound amazing, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Dude, yeah. One of my favorite bands.
So what do you do when you're doing live broadcasting?
Okay, so I had a separate console. There's 2 consoles already that we were traveling with.
Right.
One for the monitor console, which is the sound for the people on stage.
Right, right.
Front of house console is for the audience. And then I had a separate broadcast console. So any show where the market, whatever, the local radio or TV, wanted to get a live feed of that performance that night, I would mix it. They would get a copy of it, either broadcasting it live or re-air it shortly thereafter.
And wow.
Yeah. It was great.
So stupid.
And I did another live recording tour with Devo. Where
nice.
Did you get a hat?
Did you get a hat?
I did not get one of the.
Did you ask him?
What's the point of working with Devo unless you get a flower pot hat? It doesn't make any sense.
I didn't pick one up. But we on that one, we would record the show and then.
Did you whip it? Whip it into shape?
Ooh, you had that one ready. Wow.
Eddie doesn't care. It doesn't impress him.
No.
We were selling copies of the CD right after the show, which was kind of a cool thing. I know that there's a couple bands that do that.
They were burning the actual show.
Yeah,
did you mix it live like that?
So I was getting stems from the front of house engineer, and then I was mixing in audience mics and doing a little bit of mastering.
Dude, that is crazy.
Yeah.
That's a lot of juggling. You're spinning a lot of plates when you do that, and you're doing it in a timely fashion where mm-hmm. it's like you're obviously checking for quality control, but you are it's like one quick balancing act.
Yeah.
How long would it take you to do? Go ahead.
No, I was like, how long did it take to mass produce enough to sell after a show?
Well, they had a big like refrigerator size CD duplicator that we were traveling with.
Wow.
So yeah, I think you would sell maybe 150 copies at the most.
And how many would they duplicate? Like 32 at a time or something like that?
Something like that. And it was pretty fast.
That's crazy.
So yeah, as soon as the show was done, we'd run it straight out to the merch booth, and they would start burning copies. So people had to stick around maybe 20 or 30 minutes, but
still, like you getting a concert mix. I got a recording of the Allman Brothers like that,
yeah,
and it was mixed, mastered, and just like quickly thrown together, but it still sounds amazing.
Well, Pearl Jam does that with their concerts. They
really
bootleg everything, and then not the day of the concert, but it goes up on their website. Like a couple days later, and you can just download that concert, the show you were at.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
They do it with like every show, the catalog.
But see, with that, you have time to do tweaks. With this, by the time people are walking out, if you don't have that thing ready, it's like you lose the market too. You know, it's like you have people stand in line and wait. But I mean, that I didn't know you did that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's fun.
Well, it cuts out bootleggers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, it's like it makes you sharp, like as a band, as an engineer. As a, like a business,
but it also cuts out that guy stealing your show's revenue, and you get to collect that new revenue stream of the bootlegging. Because no one's going to buy some crappy bootleg; they'll buy the band's produced bootleg.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded really good. Yeah. I mean, these were good quality recordings too.
Did you bring any? I know you brought some recordings. Let's hear some things that you've done. What do you have? What's track one that you're playing for us?
So I think here one of them is "Guilty," which was. It's a cover of Barry Gibb and Barbra Streisand. So one of the projects I did out here was a cover album of Bee Gees songs. And it was a lot of fun working with a band called The Population Game that good friends with all of them. And then on this, I had a friend, Mapuana Makia, who...
bless you.
Yeah, Hawaiian name. She sang on it and did an amazing job. So it was a fun kind of tribute to the Bee Gees and... great experience like reimagining the song a little bit.
Awesome. And where did you record it at?
I think we recorded everything at Stag.
Okay.
And then I probably mixed it. I'm not sure. I can't remember now when it was. But I have my own studio that I do mixing
at.
Make it up. I did it either in my garage studio or my studio in Studio City.
And we'll talk more about that in a second, but let's listen to some music.
All right.
Guilty.
Guilty. That just puts you in a move, man. It does. Just want to groove.
Such a good song. And I got to give a lot of credit to the male vocalist on there, Justin Avery.
Sounds great.
Killer job. You should check out his music, justinavery.com.
I will, man. You've mentioned him before. I know you've worked with him a couple
times. Justin and I work together a lot on different projects, a lot of writing stuff that we've done together.
Is this still a project that he tours with?
He's been playing piano for Meatloaf for a long time. Okay. He does work with him, has been working on his albums recently. And then he and I also work a lot with a band called The Company Men. Yeah. And they do the mashup covers, and they've been doing a lot more public performances lately. And so I'm doing a run of shows with them at the end of May up in at the Falls View Casino near Niagara Falls. So.
That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Get some gambling on. Get some Niagara Falls on.
Yeah.
No, the vibe of that song, I mean, you really got the 70s vibe in that. I mean, it's like groovy as shit. There's a little 7-4 bar in there. I loved.
Mm-hmm.
I was like asking these. I'm like, is that a 7-4 bar? And you were like, yeah, I think so. I'm like, dude, I'm like, this is crazy. Who puts a 7-4 bar in a funk tune?
I don't know, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, like most songs are in 4. Like that's common time.
Yeah.
Where it's just like pretty straight. But when you put a 7-4 bar in something, you're actually taking a beat out. So
it's 3.
It sounds like 4 and then 3, but you're expecting it to be.
What is called a 3 bar?
Well, it's a 4 bar and a 3 bar, essentially, but it's a 7. It's a 7-4, depending on the phrase.
Yeah.
That was a 7-4 phrase. But, dude, it was slamming. Like, that was so funky. Man.
Yeah, the band is great, too. Jevin Hunter on drums, Brett Farkas on guitar, and Joe Ayoub on the bass.
There. You got to ask that guitar player what that envelope filter was, man. You didn't have to text me outside of the radio station to let me know, because that was so killing, so funky. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to record it and mix it and all that?
Well, we did the rhythm tracking in a day. We did 5 songs. And then Justin and I spent a lot of time afterwards adding keyboard layers and doing vocals. And
he plays keys?
Yeah, does keys, yeah.
Killing track.
Yeah, so we did. I think at the time I was still working out of my garage studio, which did you ever?
I think I did. I've done some work in there, yeah.
It's a nice little space.
Yeah, but now you got a much, much, much more elevated space. Let's talk about that. So we actually had your partner, Sean
Jones.
His recording partner. Not to confuse you, Eddie. Mm. Don't get too excited.
Wow.
No. Sean Jones was on our show about 2 or 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you both have a recording space that I've actually worked in quite a bit.
Yeah.
And tell us about that space and how long it took you to put it all together. And
yeah, so I've been there, I think, a little over 3 years. When I first started working there, another engineer named Tony Shepard had been using a room there. And it's in a complex where there's 8 different production studios. And some of the guys that have been in there have worked in my room previously, and people kind of shuffle around to different rooms. So Tony and I shared the room for a while, and then Tony has a home studio that is amazing up in Van Nuys that he was doing most of his work out of. So he said, look, I'm going to not continue working here, but if you want to have the room, you can have it. And then Sean had been working with me a little bit at Stagg Street.
That's right.
And
that's
then
right.
He had a home set up that was pretty great, so I invited him to come and share
the join
space.
Forces like Voltron.
And it worked really well. Like, we had a good combination of gear that didn't overlap too much. And
right.
So
did you have any doubled things like
SM57s.
Okay, yeah, I mean, of course, that's standard.
What's an SM57?
It's a microphone.
It's kind of the industry standard, like for a utility mic for just about anything that's not going to break on you, and or you're not going to cry if it does break because it's not too expensive.
It's not too expensive. Mm. It's not a, not a $15,000 mic.
Yeah,
but you'd be amazed. Like Bono does his vocals on an SM58, doesn't he?
You can,
Well, he does. That's what he does. That's what he's known for, which is crazy to me. I'm like, man, but that's how he does all his vocals. So. A lot of artists will record because it's like what you use.
What are we talking on right now?
I don't know what model. You would actually probably know. A Sterling Audio?
These are some
I don't know.
MXLs, I
see. I don't know.
What is it?
What is this? What is this microphone? I don't know. We're getting all gear-heady. See, why'd you take it? You just like took the wheel.
Because I know your parents are listening.
They're like, put on. It's the only reason I do microphone?
It. Just to make them cringe.
You're crazy.
A little bit.
All right, so I also know that, you know, when you and I were working a lot, you were also on the road with Tayo Cruz, right?
Yeah.
So talk about that experience.
Well, I've worked with him for maybe 4 years off and on now. And the cool thing about him is that he has a huge international presence. So we've traveled to places all around the world that I never expected to go. Been to Turkey, been to Sri Lanka, Indonesia.
Wow. Was he like, Ethan, I'm huge in Sri Lanka?
I mean, these are big
I
shows.
I move so much merch in Sri Lanka.
It's interesting, the level of production when you go to a place like that is not what you would usually expect. They've got all these weird adapters that they're trying to make work with,
really?
With the gear. It can be a little bit fishy.
No, don't do that.
Well, cause especially
that's going to blow it up.
When Tayo does a lot more spot dates instead of doing a regular tour, so you're having to source out the equipment from local vendors, and you want to keep it as consistent as possible because you know time is limited, and you just want everything to be the same it was at the last show.
Were you ever just like don't touch? Oh,
nothing has exploded.
close call.
Yeah.
And there's also like adapters in the plugs, like just the outlets, the energy, right?
Well, there's power issues that you gotta to worry about. Yeah.
I've never even thought about that. Like if I had to take recording gear on the road to international places, like the power, like how does that work out?
I know
it's a bizarre question.
You can either get transformers depending on what kind of gear needs to be converted, or you can just get regular adapters. If you're just plugging in a laptop, all you need is a little adapter.
But I mean, most of the time you're not just bringing a laptop, you're bringing a lot more involved sound, right?
It depends. If you're doing a long tour, like last year I was working with this band R5, and so we flew over a lot of gear to our European leg, and so you just got to look on the back of the equipment to see if it'll take the 220 volts power. Wow. And
so let's talk about that R5. You've been on the road with them for quite a bit.
Well, I started working with them at the beginning of last year, and so we did a show on I think New Year's of 2013, and then so we had a show in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where it was freezing. And then we went
I've done Pennsylvania when it's that cold, and it's not easy.
And then went down to Puerto Rico and then the Dominican Republic, where it was scorching
nice and
hot.
Warm.
And then on the way back, we got stuck in New York. It was one of the times when the weather was just incredibly cold. And luckily, we had that Hershey show to prepare me. Yeah, well, at least I had some jackets and stuff to be prepared. But then we went through Europe for 5 weeks, and then we did a Canadian run for a few weeks, and then came back.
And this was their first time doing shows at this level, like as far as like snow shows and hot shows like that.
Well, I mean, I think
the world.
I'm not sure if they'd done. I know they had been to Japan before. I'm not sure how many other European shows they had done, but they were still well attended. Young girls lined up outside since the beginning of the
day. And Eddie was there
always.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with R5, they're kind of a Disney band. They don't want to be called a Disney band. I should rephrase that. They're a pop rock group. Main singer Ross is on the Disney Channel on the show Austin and Ally. The bass player has been on Glee. He's currently on Dancing with the Stars. So they have a pretty big following, and they're going out getting ready for another summer tour, and I'm doing a show with them in about a week and a half in Tucson,
awesome.
Arizona.
Oh, that'll be warm and nice.
Yeah.
Be almost too warm. Well, let's get to another one of your songs. What are you playing for us next?
All right, let's next there's a song called Triangle, and it's by girl named Afton Heffley, who I'm great friends with. Her artist name is Sangster.
Sangster. She's like, Ethan, don't tell him my name.
just kidding. So we did a whole record in my studio, and it was all acoustic instruments, which is great because so often now there's a lot of programming involved in records. But her boyfriend, Nick Mancini, is an amazing vibes player, so we had some really cool mallet stuff. I can't even remember what all we have on this particular track. There was cello. We had some different size harmonicas that we brought in.
Wow.
Drums. It's a really sonically interesting record.
Well, let's hear it. What's the name of the song?
Triangle.
Triangle. Let's do it.
Try, try.
definitely a fan and a child of the 70s. Yeah. I definitely hear a lot of 70s influence.
Which is crazy because you never lived in that decade.
No, born in 83.
That's so true. That's so true. You're like, this doesn't make sense. No, really, you must love the 70s. Honestly, that's like a – I love the 70s music,
too. I do, but I'm also really into current music. I like the way technology can affect current music. I mean,
that leads me to my next question. Who are you listening to?
Oh, boy.
What are some of your favorite records of the last 6 months or a year?
So, Kimbra, I'm very excited about. Yeah. As far as more of the electronic stuff, I really like the stuff Zed does.
Yep, he's bad.
I'm into bands like Mute Math.
Dude, high five. We've talked about this many times.
Yeah.
One of my favorite bands ever. And he, I think, was I wearing a shirt or were you wearing a shirt?
I don't have one.
I came to a session wearing a Mute Math and you're like, dude, you like Mute Math? And I was like, man, they're one of my favorite bands ever. They're awesome.
Really like the band Dawes. I think they have a new record coming out in June, so I'm excited to hear what they have in store.
All good records, all good bands, all good artists. Yeah. We like that. So where can people find you? If people want to hire you for their next record, where can people find you?
You got to dig me out of the studio. I'm always
in the studio. You're trapped under all that gear.
Yeah.
Under all those microphones and cables.
You can. I have a music publishing company with my friend Claire Kershane, who's an amazing cellist and trombone player. So we do a lot of writing for commercials and TV and film. And so Stereographic Entertainment is the name of our company. And we have a website.
Spell it all out because some of our listeners, we may not.
Are you calling them stupid?
Some of them, I'm sure, probably are a little bit.
Stupid. I didn't call them stupid, guys. You're my buddies.
I'm just kidding.
Just go to Google, Stereographic Entertainment. You'll find us.
There you go.
Google will correct the spelling for you.
Yeah. That's what I always do. If I'm not sure about a word,
like, just Google. Google. Yeah. Google your spelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. And you also have what was I just going to ask? I was going to ask you a question. I just blanked. You have another website. Not a website. Where can people find your studio if they want to record? That was the question.
I'm in Studio City. But the best way is to
not just a clever name for a city.
Yeah, we're in Studio City. We call the studio Studio B, it's right near Lemonade. If you ever go by Lemonade there, it's
on Ventura. Right there Ventura.
Was it on Riverside?
Ventura and Ventura. Woodside.
Yep.
Oh, Woodside.
It's a great studio.
There's another Lemonade on Riverside or not Riverside.
Yeah, we got to find that out because otherwise you're going to send people to the wrong studio. There's a couple Lemonades in Ventura. I mean, on Ventura.
Not on Ventura, on the
Riverside.
It's in the valley near Studio City. It's
like Lemonade Toluca, better Toluca sponsor Lake, this show for Lake. some heavy sponsoring.
Just saying, I don't want people going the wrong one.
Yeah, I've been to the studio. It's actually got some great gear, and I've worked with both Sean and Ethan. Great engineers, they are fantastic. Real quick, where can people find you in the live setting? You have a band that you are performing.
Yeah,
with.
So tomorrow night I'm playing with my roommate Matt. Matt Ducey has a band called The Battlefield.
I know Matt. Yeah, he's the best. Yeah, from the House of Blues. I know Matt very well.
So he, Jenny Weaver, and Jimmy Addison, the three of them have a band called The Battlefield, and so I've done a couple different recording projects for them, and then when they play live. The three of them will add other musicians depending on what the show is. So I've been playing bass with them lately.
That's awesome.
Tomorrow night we're playing...
No trumpet?
No trumpet, no.
Not yet.
My trumpet playing is even worse now than it was when I almost got kicked out of college, so you don't want to hear it.
Well, Eddie plays the butt trumpet, if you're interested.
With a lighter, it's amazing.
So anyway, The Battlefield is playing tomorrow night at Harvard and Stone in Hollywood, 9 p.m. It's a free show.
That was Eddie. Sorry. Free show, 9 p.m.
Harvard and Stone.
Where is that?
It's on Hollywood Boulevard.
Way down there towards Los Feliz, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dude, look at
you,
Eddie.
It used to be Stone Bar. Now it's Harvard and Stone.
It's great. It looks great inside. Really cool.
Cool. That's awesome. That must be exciting.
Yeah.
Get out and play some live shows.
It's nice to be on the other side of the glass and pretend to be kind of a rock star.
Well, let's play a track by this band. All right,
so this song is called Into the Smoke and Maze, and it's by The Battlefield.
All right.
Red light. flashing, it's stopped and it's hold. I feel like I'm finally broke. And I keep on asking myself for a reason why I thought I needed more.
Thank you, Ethan, for being on the show. On behalf of Eddie Pence and I, we are Wake Up Hollywood. We'll see you next week.